This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Bradley Chambers. Frazier is not with us this week due to his travel schedule. We have a special guest, but before we introduce him, let's thank our sponsors for tonight.
Our first sponsor is EasyWatch.com. They have over 30 years' experience in the security camera systems industry. In addition to having businesses, they also specialize in security camera systems for schools. We're also sponsored by Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly in the documents. And finally, we're sponsored by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Use the offer code PEOPLE at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Tonight, we have a longtime good friend of mine. First time on the show, but somebody that when I just started in education really befriended me, and I, in some ways, like, I feel like he took me under his wing and just kind of helped me understand the ropes, and that is Kevin Gosha. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So for our listeners, tell us a little bit about who you are, you know, where you've been and where you're at now.
Sure. Well, when I initially met Bradley, I was the technology director at Curry Ingram Academy, which is a K-12 independent school in outside of Nashville. For any student that's not meeting their full potential in a traditional classroom, and the way that they help kids meet their goals is through a 4-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio, with SLPs and OTs on staff and a 1-to-1 laptop program since 2002. And I was very fortunate to be there for 13 years. And they were one of the early 1-to-1 laptop schools in the country. And so I had a great experience learning about all the best practices for 1-to-1 schools. And they had just amazing resources. And it is just a phenomenal place. So I highly advise all of the listeners out there to take a look at Curry Ingram Academy. Since then, I've moved on to Roaring Fork School District in Carbondale. Our district office is here in Carbondale, Colorado. Amazingly beautiful Carbondale, just outside of Aspen in the Roaring Fork Valley. And we have around 5,300 students and 470 teachers, and we're working our way up. We're in year 3 of a 5-year 1-to-1 Chromebook deployment, and then all the teachers and administrators have MacBooks.
Yeah, Curry Ingram was one of the schools that we toured when I first came to Brainerd, and we wanted to go to schools that we liked what they were doing, and just to talk to them and walk around their campus, see how they're laid out, talk to their IT folks, talk to their teachers, and learn what's working well. And I've mentioned before on the show that I think that's one of the most valuable things, more so than conferences, that I think a school can do, is to find people who you like what they're doing and go talk to them. And so this was, I guess, early 2010 when we came and visited you guys, and we had just switched to Google Apps. And it kind of, and this was before Google Apps was like a thing. And you guys were Google Apps as well. And so I think that kind of gave our headmaster some validation that it was like a good move. And then obviously in retrospect, like everybody's doing that. It's almost the exception when you're not a Google Apps school or even some sort of hosted school. So usually Google Apps or usually Exchange 365 are the kind of the big two. And I always knew Curry Ingram was like a really well done place. It's like little things you can see about a school. But when we came there, it was like early spring, I guess, and your mulch was perfect. It was like the dark, you know, like the darker the mulch seems like the more expensive it is. And it was like the blackest of the mulch. It was like well manicured. And that's like a dumb thing in a way. But it's like you can tell a lot about an organization about how they treat their grounds. And sure. It's like the details. They care about the details.
Absolutely. And, you know, a big foundation of their beliefs there is that a lot of the kids that end up there have been through the ringer, and they really want to put them in the nicest possible environment to show them that they can succeed and they're worth. So that was really, you know, they really did cover all the details there, and it was an amazing place to be.
Well, and to me, that's like the great thing about technology as an equalizer for a lot of kids that maybe have struggled. And is it a, if it can provide those kids a way to catch back up and to excel? And because there are some kids that do have certain disabilities or have had trying circumstances and situations. And then if we can use technology to really get them on track, and then that's like a huge win and help those kids be succeed in all their goals and all they want to do in life. Because all, like I did a paper when I was in college about that the, like over time in the, over the past, this was like, or the, I guess mid 2000s, that the average age of the college, average college student was going up. That it was like, instead of being like 18 to 22, you had a lot of 25 to 30 students, and just how that trend was rising. It was due to things like military deployments, kids going back to school after being in the military, or kids that maybe worked a few years, maybe could, you know, went to school, worked, and then were, kind of got serious about it. And that they learned, you know, adult learners learn differently than kids who are 18, and that we have to teach them differently, and we expect them to act differently, and then we approach their curriculum differently. And yeah, so Cary Ingram is a great school, and so if you're ever, if you're in near Tennessee, that would be a great school for you to go to visit. They do such a wonderful job. And so there, you guys, again, you had one-to-one laptops since 2002, and gosh, you were doing one-to-one laptop when there was no good Wi-Fi infrastructure as well.
Right. It's kind of hard to remember those times. We take it for granted so much now. And just to bounce back to one thing you were saying before is that, you know, technology is naturally assistive in nature. And it was such that that's one of the reasons we went one-to-one so early is because it, we saw with kids that were having reading deficits and dyscalculia and that it was such that, that it was technology is so assistive in nature that immediately it helped our kids with organization and so many different things. But yeah, early on in the one-to-one program, the bandwidth was, you know, less of an issue because the devices were a lot less stateless, that they're more stateful. And that was a lot less of a concern. But, you know, as we've developed greater bandwidth and relied more on cloud services, that has become square one, you know, if you will.
Well, you know, that's kind of changed how I think about Wi-Fi deployments in terms of these stateless devices, because even if you think about, like, you know, I'll put like a MacBook Air or a Mac with like a solid state drive in it, those flash memory, you know, in kind of the camp with iPhones and iPads, these devices are always connected. And when you guys were first starting that, you had these devices, it was very much a, okay, let's open our laptops, let's like take 10 minutes to boot up, let's log onto the network. And now it's just like an instant state of connectivity. You're always connected. There is no sign on, sign out. It's just, it's always there.
Absolutely.
And so what did you guys even do for like a Wi-Fi infrastructure when you're first starting? Like, what even vendors were popular back then for enterprise stuff, or did you even have enterprise grade gear?
At that point, the, you know, Cisco was the biggest player with the enterprise stuff, and to have a centralized management piece was so inhibitively expensive for us that we actually just used the airports. And, you know, that was back when Apple was really supporting education, and they had a full engineering team that would came out our first year on our new campus in 2002. And helped us really develop that infrastructure using airports and distributed management, which was, when I look back on doing that now, it's kind of ridiculous. But at the time, it really suited us well.
Well, yeah, because it's like if you're in a situation now where it was either like a big Cisco deployment or nothing, or you know, and there were no Aerohives, there were no like kind of these vendors that were easy to deploy that were more affordable, you'd probably still go back to the airport because it's like it could still work. It wouldn't be fun, but like it could still sort of functionally make that work. Maybe with like a, you know, under 20 APs. Right. But yeah, it's like you look at all the tools we have now, and it kind of does blow your mind how much easier the infrastructure has gotten over the years, and it had to, because for these devices to take off and for the teachers to be able to trust them, for the students to be able to rely on them, that part had to get easier, because you can't expect every school to have a Cisco engineer on staff.
Right. And I saw a lot of one-to-one schools make that mistake with learning, you know, taking a long time to learn from enterprise as far as efficiency. And, you know, a lot of schools that had non-standard printers or printers in every classroom. And I think when we first met, I was really hitting my stride in that perspective as far as, you know, investing in systems in the front end and the engineering that are going to be efficient, so that you can devote those resources to supporting teachers and not to, you know, chasing your tail with things breaking and being non-standard.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, you want to, you know, if you're spending your days like constantly rebooting stuff, it's like you've got the wrong gear. You're spending your resources on broke fix when maybe not printers, so they're always going to come out of pain. But like there's good gear you can buy for switches for Wi-Fi, for projectors that should just work, and so you can spend your time like more in planning and proactive rather than just like there's always fires at your ankles mode.
Absolutely.
You know, because you know, it's like I saw somebody tweet earlier today that yeah, most companies you can't spend $500 without a purchase order getting approved, but you can call an hour meeting with 20 people and no one bats an eye. And people costs are expensive, and like I've designed our network here to be as low maintenance in terms of like people requirements as possible, because I really don't want to get into a situation where I need to hire someone else to do IT admin. If I want to hire someone, it's for someone to spend more time with teachers.
Sure. Well, I'm absolutely, that is the bottom line is devoting those resources to supporting the classroom is the key there. I'm seeing kind of the flip side to the flat, simple, and manageable network that we had at Curry Ingram, in that here at Roaring Fork, you know, we have an economy of scale, being, you know, a mid-sized public district, to where on staff I have, you know, programmers and engineers, and we have systems that we've developed in-house over the years. And so that's one big thing that I've been trying to get my head around, is switching from this, you know, managed service paradigm to providing some of those services and figuring out how we can do it efficiently with the resources that I have in the district. So that's been kind of fun, like a kind of new toy that I have in the garage, is having all these brainiacs that we can develop some things in-house and really suit the district's needs. But I think that's going to be a big part of my role going forward is balancing that with how far do you take that and still be efficient and still be able to devote those resources to the classroom.
Yeah, let's unpack that. But before we do, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Now start building your website today at squarespace.com. And when you check out, enter offer code PUPIL to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Now, my website, chambersdaily.com, is built on Squarespace. Fraser's blog, built on Squarespace. I highly recommend it. It's one of those things where when people ask me where to build a website, they have to really convince me that they need something that Squarespace can't do. It's my go-to. Squarespace has state-of-the-art technology powering your site to ensure security and stability. There's no software patches to apply, no plugins to update. It's trusted by millions of people and some of the most respected brands in the world. It starts at just $8 a month, and if you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. So that's like $10 savings right there. Again, all their templates are responsive. You can go in there and you can add your own JavaScript. Add your own store. You can process payments. You can automate the shipping. Again, if you're starting a website, go check out Squarespace to do a free trial. Use the offer code PEOPLE at checkout to get 10% off. No credit card required on this trial. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Yeah, so yeah, I'm in that kind of the boat too. And if you think about it, like when I was in college, I worked at EB Games. It's become GameStop. It was like one of the big video game retailers. And a friend of mine got promoted from store manager to district manager. And I said, what's like the big difference now? And he said, well, he goes, it's so much easier to be a store manager because you only have to worry about your store. And you can make your store the best. He goes, now I'm a district manager and I have 12 stores. And I have to make sure the store managers care about each store like I would. And I thought that was like a great point. Yeah. And so you're kind of in that boat now because, you know, how many schools do you actually cover?
I believe there's 12 actual traditional schools. There's some other community services and whatnot, but we'll go with 12 schools.
Yeah. So what is your makeup like? Do you have someone? So obviously you're in the central office. Is there like an on-site person at every school?
There is what we call community tech for each community. So in each community, there's three communities here, Carbondale, Basalt, and Glenwood Springs. And then in each of those communities, there's four schools. And so that tech will, you know, make their way around to each school every day and runs the level one support for all of those communities.
Yeah, so, you know, you've got to, you know, it's not just about you caring about, okay, I know that Curry Ingham's running well. You're thinking, okay, I know the district office is running well, but how are things at every school? And I'm sure it's like one of those things where, you know, you want to know, like, how do you know if people are happy? How do you know if things are running well outside of the fact that things are just not broken? And that's going to be a challenge from a managerial perspective as well.
Yeah, and that's something I'm still just sinking my teeth into. You know, I feel like I've found a really good spot. I'm fortunate about the team that I have, the feedback that I've had from the principals and the different district personnel that I've met and the superintendent are that the technology department has a fantastic reputation. The person, Jeff Gatlin, who was in my position for the last 2 years, has now moved up to chief operating officer. And so he's still here with me day to day and is able to advise me. I think that's going to be a big thing going forward is finding that consistency across the district and making sure that all those schools are achieving as they can, but also respecting their identity, which is, you know, cool because each school has a different strengths and different things that they focus on. So that's going to be an interesting dance. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, one of the things that is like here, like I don't run wire, for example. Like I just honestly, the running wire, you know, up in an 80-year-old building isn't my strength. And I don't think it's probably, even if I could, I don't think it's a wise use of my time. Sure. But so like on the flip side, because we actually have an actual cost in running wire, mm-hmm. we think it like when someone says, hey, I want to move something here. I think, okay, like we had somebody that's like, they're rearranging a suite of offices. They said, hey, we want to move. We need power here, data here, data there. And I said, well, that's great. Like, do you have the budget to pay for that? And they said, well, no. So it's like you can easily say, like, well, we can do that, but, like, you're going to have to come up with, like, $500 to get all this wiring done. Well, it makes them think whether they want to do it or not. But, like, you know, you mentioned you guys have in-house programmers. So if someone wants to say, you know, okay, we need to do this, like, custom piece. You know, it's got to be in some ways more of a challenge because it's not just about like, well, we got to go hire someone. You have someone on staff, but you have to make the decision of like, how do I manage their time? And is that a good, it's not just about like, is it cool or would it be useful, but is that a wise use of our resources?
Right. And you know, I think what you just mentioned sometimes what has been in the past, maybe kind of an excuse for me to keep things more efficient without having to explain why we shouldn't do certain things to school personnel, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that's going to be a different experience here, having that economy of scale and the ability to implement those things. I think that it's going to come with a consistent message and getting people on board. And I feel like the district has gone in the right direction. Over the last couple of years. And so, I feel like if I'm on point with that message, hopefully I'll be able to sell that, my perspective there.
Well, the thing about like technology stuff is it's kind of like building buildings, you know, if you say, or adding rooms, like you say, okay, we want to turn this big room into 10 offices. Well, that's great. But then there are 10 offices that have to be vacuumed. They have to have the trash emptied. They have to be maintained. They have to be repainted. They have to have new carpet. They have to need new lights every few years. And so, like, there's sunk cost in maintaining that office. And that's the same thing with, like, you know, let's say somebody say, hey, we need to write a program to manage our volunteer database. We don't like what our CRM has. We want to do our own thing. And so you say, okay, we can do that, but that's going to require like ongoing maintenance and ongoing software upgrades and ongoing this and that. And how do we pay for that? And like, I've only got X number of programmers, and if we keep adding, then we're going to have to hire another programmer, and who's paying for that, and where's that budget coming from? And like, those, I guess, the kind of things like you've got to be wrapping your head around, because it's not just about like, okay, we, you know, my department makes doors, and once the door's built, we don't have to do that door anymore. You know, it's like everything, even if you because you built it, it's still yours.
Right. Well, having the central office, the programmers and those folks on my team, we have the opportunity to talk that through. The part that gets tricky is the shadow systems that people come up with when they're saying, oh, guess what we bought? You know, we bought the subscription to this database. Can you help us with account management? Or, you know, hey, we bought all these smart boards but never thought of training. So it's I think it's those little things when they're individual schools are trying to go out on their own and it's in their, you know, best interest, and they're trying to help themselves, but they don't see necessarily the bigger picture. And so that's going to be a big point of communication with all the schools and making sure that relationship is really strong with our community techs. So that, you know, the more trusted you get, the better things operate, the more willing people are to ask before they proceed with things like that. So I think the bigger programming projects, I'm not so concerned about, other than my judgment on what we can capacitate. It's the smaller things, the shadow systems that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like you said on the account manager on this database program, because if you weren't involved in the purchasing decision, maybe there was one that like would integrate better into whatever directory system you use. And that would have been a better one to pick because of that. And because that one didn't get picked, you're going to have a tougher time doing the integration. That's like really a lot of management stuff, because, you know, not only is like your background in technology, but then you've got to be an incredible manager as well. Now, it's not just about you. Like for me, like I've got to know how to do the technical stuff and then provide good service because I'm a one-man department. But for you, the technical stuff is important to you now, but like in some ways being an incredible manager and being an incredible director is your main role.
Right. Yeah. That's a big piece of it. And when you're dealing with all the talent that I have in my department, it's sometimes hard to make that cohesive because, we've got people that are really adept at Joomla, or people that are on different platforms, our Unix guru, we've got our Mac guru. And so to get them all on board with one system, I think is going to be, and everybody excited about it, is going to be interesting. I think they've done a good job at it so far.
Before we move on, let's thank our second sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Shobi. Now, Shobi is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobi from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobi's built-in tools. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobi Basic is 100% free, and teachers can try it out with their entire class in just a few minutes. You can download Shobi on the App Store by searching for Shobi, S-H-O-W-B-I-E. Now, Shobi is also offering a special deal for school administrators listening to this show. If you like Shobi Basic and you want to move up to Shobi Pro, you can. If you buy a license for 5-year teachers, they'll give you an additional 5 for free for a year. So that's buy 5, get 5 free for a year. Go to shobi.com/out of school for more details. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes at outofschool.net. So you mentioned at the start of the show that you guys are doing one-to-one Chromebooks for students, and then teachers are MacBooks. What was the decision there? Like, why Macs for the teachers? Why not do Chromebooks across the board, or why not do Macs across the board?
Before they started the Chromebook program, we had in the district, the teachers had already had Macs, and then we had carts and labs and iPads. And so at that point, they actually passed a mill levy that funded the Chromebook initiative. And we're in our third year of that rollout. So it's kind of a transition from that model to the Chromebook one-to-one.
I mean, from a management perspective, you know, we actually just deployed 10 of the Chrome bases in our library, and the management on Chrome OS is pretty incredible. I mean, what you can just do from the web, and it kind of happens. It's automatic inventory. It's really kind of magnificent. Which Chromebook are you guys using for your students?
The most recent one that we've got 1,000 of coming in any day is the Lenovo N21. That one, it has 4 gigs of RAM.
That one I think came out last fall, and that's a really, well, maybe actually this spring, that's a really solid machine. And I think 4 gigs of RAM is, even when you're buying that many, I think is a wise move. I'm assuming MacBook Airs for your faculty and staff.
Actually they mostly have the base level MacBook. The schools kind of choose. We give them a kind of a menu of all the different options that they have to use their budget for, and then we divvy up part of that for the mill funds as far as what's going towards Chromebooks, and then they can kind of choose what models they want, whether they want labs or whether they want to give what they want to get their teachers. But the model that was offered them this year was either the Air or the base level MacBook Pro, and I think I don't think anybody went with the Airs, which was kind of surprising to me.
Oh, okay. So I guess that's, you guys are, you're in a big different like kind of environment coming from a private school to a public school district. What's been the biggest challenge there in terms of that mindset?
Well, so far, and there hasn't been one just because I've, I just started here and it's in the summer. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I'm really benefiting from all the support that I have. I think there's a lot of things that I'm having to really try hard to wrap my head around as far as what I just mentioned, all the different, like you asked, why would you go Chromebooks and half MacBooks and all that? So in my travels throughout the district and getting to know the systems, it's been really challenging because it is a lot less uniform than I'm used to. And then the infrastructure is just massive compared to what I'm used to.
How is it set up technology wise? Like, is each school, is it one centrally managed like Wi-Fi network? Is, you know, what are you using? How do you manage the Macs? How is your entire network laid out?
So we just replaced our Wi-Fi, our Meraki system with Ruckus, the new AC Wave 2, which we're really pleased with. And so we have 2 controllers for that in each community. And then each community is connected via our own fiber runs. And then that all goes back to, you know, our main switches in our central office in Glenwood. And we're kind of split between 2 network providers, one down Valley and in Glenwood, and then one on this side in Carbondale and Basalt. All of that is way, way, way more complicated than I'm used to. And, you know, fortunately, we have network engineers to walk me through all that and help me start to try and understand what an enterprise network looks like. As far as managing the Macs, right now, we're still using the Meraki Systems Manager to push out profiles that we build in Apple Server. And we also use Monkey, which is a network packaged deployment tool. Have you ever used
Monkey? No, I'll have to look that up. I've not heard of that.
It's really cool. At Kuring, we use a similar product called FileWave that allows you to do over-the-air installs, allows the user, you install a small, lightweight user piece, and then Mac will check in periodically for updates and allows them then for you to push out packages without and updates without the user having to use an Apple ID. That whole conundrum with the Apple IDs that's been going on for the last couple of years, we've They've dodged that here by using Monkey. We dodged it by using FileWave at Curry Ingram. So, you know, for instance, last week when it was, 10-10-5 that came out? Was it 10-10-5 or 10-10-4?
10-10-4.
When 10-10-4 came out, our guy that manages Monkey just took that update and put it onto the Monkey server, and then all of the clients, when they checked in, it says, you have an update, and they can apply it without having to go through the App Store. And then it'll also check for all the different updates for the software that's installed.
Yeah, that is a conundrum here that you run into is, like, organizations don't have a way to, like, mass create Apple IDs. We've talked about it on the past shows. And then with that's, like, kind of, to install a major OS upgrade for the Mac, you've got to have an Apple ID. And so, yeah, you can kind of dodge that way. So you guys were using Meraki. I know you guys used Meraki at Curry Ingram, and then I think you had switched to Ubiquiti. Is that correct?
Yeah, they are currently switching to Ubiquiti, which I'm very bullish on because of the price point is incredible. And I've done a couple installs of those systems and I really like them. But I got to say to any of the Meraki users out there, if you're thinking about switching, make sure and remove the licenses from your access points before your cloud controller gets deactivated, because it essentially bricks those APs, and then you cannot resell them if you don't remove the licenses.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons I'm not a huge fan of Meraki from a technical perspective, but that's probably my major complaint is if your license expires, your hardware literally stops working, and that's...
Well, not only that, not only does it stop working, but then you cannot get rid of it. It's really a doorstop. It's not only that, it brings your network down, which we anticipated, but we were told we'd be able to resell the equipment. But now, unless we renew the license, we can't get in there to tell it to disassociate the license.
Yeah.
So their licensing structure is just is whacked.
Well, and I think we talked back in the spring, and it's like it would cost you. It's costing you less to go to something else than it is to renew, because it's like they're probably their cash cow of those licenses, and probably for a lot of districts, it's just easier to pay the license because then you don't have to deploy a new network.
Swap them out.
But Curry Ingram, it's not that big of a network, and it's like, well, we'll bear through it and we'll deploy something new that we can afford.
Right, and then now they're going to have brand new shiny AC access points rather than just renewing for those N and saving a bundle.
Yeah, in the process.
And not worrying about that being up against that on the other end.
Right, a couple years from now.
There's no ongoing license fees.
Our last sponsor of the night is EasyWatch.com. They have over 30 years experience in the security camera systems industry. In addition to helping businesses, EasyWatch specializes in security camera systems for schools. Many security camera systems are not sufficient, and EasyWatch values the quality of their products and their customers above all else, meaning they won't sell it if it doesn't meet their standards. EasyWatch tests every system extensively and offers lifetime technical support. During the past 15 years, over 100,000 EasyWatch security customers have been successfully installed, and over 60% of their sales come from repeat customers, which they believe is the greatest endorsement of the quality of their product and excellent customer service you'll receive from them. Security solutions for schools and school systems are more important than ever, and EasyWatch is prepared to help you design a custom system to fit your needs. EasyWatch is giving listeners of Out of School a 17% off all security camera systems and security cameras. Go to EasyWatch.com/out of school to learn more and receive a custom quote today. Thanks to EasyWatch.com for sponsoring the show this week.
So, you mentioned that you have MacBooks and Chromebooks. So no iPads in the district. Is that correct?
No, there are. There are a bunch of iPads.
Okay. So you really have a mixture there. And so do you have somebody, you mentioned you've got a Mac guy. Do you have someone, like, do your community techs have to be versed in Mac, Chrome OS, and iOS as well?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think, the Chrome, like you mentioned, the management is so minimal that I'm pretty sure that we do most of that from the district office. And there are some break fix on the Chromebooks, but it's really minimal. So those are so lightweight. And then the techs all have their Apple repair certifications and you know, which to get that necessitates that you have the basic Mac certification too. So they're all versed in Mac and networking as well. So, but they're very versatile, and each of them have their different areas of strength. But I'm in awe of their versatility. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to be like a jack of all trades, where you've got to be like, if you're in a school, you've got to be in some ways a switch guy, a Wi-Fi guy. You've got to be a Mac guy. You've got to be a Mac hardware, Mac software. Of course, the great thing about the Chrome OS from a hardware perspective is if it, you know, someone breaks it, you just hand them a new one. They sign in, and their stuff's there, and it's like the mean time to repair or you recover from that is so incredibly quick. Had a situation this morning where my 2-year-old stepped on one of the iPads we have at the house is a iPad mini retina display, and he stepped on it and it put like a small crack in the corner of the screen, which bugs me to death. Like, it just bugs me to no end. And like, you can buy a new one for like three, it was a 16 gig, you can buy a new one for like $300. Apple wanted $250 to fix the screen. Kind of like, what do you mean $250? You can buy a new one for $50 more, then I would still have to, because it's still usable.
Right,
and so it's just like, I was very frustrated by that, but yeah, what are you going to do? So the guy said, "Well, you should have bought AppleCare." It's like, well, but AppleCare would be like $100, and then like the out of warranty repair would be $79. So I'd have $179 in AppleCare.
I think that's the model. You know, that those aren't supposed to be repaired as much as
buy a new one,
right? And
I guess they're essentially selling me a refurbished one for $250 is what they're doing. Right. And, you know, but it's just, it's just frustrating because I'm just going to live with it because it's like a small crack and it's still usable. It's not like it's shattered. If it gets worse, we'll replace it or something later on. But I'd be better off to sell that one broken for like $100 and then take that money and buy a new one because I think I can get like a refurbished one for like $250 or something. So from Apple. But now, when, of course, you may not know, but like since you're so new on the deployment, but like, do you guys buy AppleCare or buy the extended warranties on all the end user devices?
No, we don't. We have the Apple service certified service
self-servicing account.
Yeah, thank you. We are a self-servicing account, so we buy the 1-year warranty and then the parts only warranty. We get the 1-year warranty, and then we buy parts only so that we can exchange those.
Well, and Fraser and I have talked about this at length. If you're buying at any sort of scale, it just doesn't make sense to spend that money on the warranty because, Apple's betting that you're not going to have a problem. You're betting that you are. And AppleCare, if someone drops it, AppleCare doesn't cover it anyways.
Right.
And if you've got people that can do it, you're better off. Let's say, I'm just throwing a number. Let's say AppleCare on your size deployment is going to be $30,000. You're better off to just set $30,000 aside to pay for warranty. Even if you were having to send them into Apple, you didn't have guys on staff to take care of it, you would certainly not spend $30,000 a year in repairs because you don't need the phone support. Your guys can handle that. And it's just, it's just better off. You'd be better off to just say, okay, we have $30K in the budget for repairs over the next 3 years. You're never going to spend that.
Right. That's the way we went at Curry Ingram in the last several years, was to self-insure. And we've been looking at that here with the Chromebooks. I've been talking that over with a few people, and it's really refreshing to look at the numbers on that and say, okay, well, if we have a loss to replace the whole unit, it's under $200. To replace a trackpad, you're looking at $50. That part is really refreshing.
Yeah, it's like, I think one of the Chromebooks we were looking at, the warranty did cover like a battery, covered the battery. Basically, after 2 years, it almost replaced the battery for you. And that, like, if something covered the battery, that's the only reason I might think about it. But yeah, it's like, that's the beauty of like the Chromebook being so inexpensive versus a Mac being $1,000 is like, even if you have to literally buy a new one, it's $200 generally, or, thereabouts. So it's kind of, it's kind of nice. And of course, I'm a big fan of just overbuying by a percent or two. And if you're buying, 500 Chromebooks, buy 550 and just have some sitting there, 520, and have some sitting there as spares that you just have ready to go. And that, it's just easier when you're buying the big bulk purchase. So these Chromebooks, are you buying them or are you leasing them?
We're buying them, and we're actually purchased them through CDWG and got their white glove service. So when they show up here, they're already configured in the correct OU with the asset tag on physically on the machine, but also in our management console. So all we've got to do is ship those boxes to the correct school.
Well, yeah, and that's something that I noticed when I was deploying them. There was a little bit of a setup time, just like having, because, you know, when you boot them up, you got to get a Control-Alt-E to go to, you know, into the management console. You have to log in to enroll it. And, of course, the accounts I use are all two-factor authentication, so I have to, like, type in the long password, get the text message, enter that. And certainly in your size district, like, it's worth paying for, because for you to have to unbox every one of them, enroll them, and then get those things moved into the right organizational unit would take you some time.
Right, right. To get those 1,000 machines, especially this time of year with all of the different projects and vacations and all those moving pieces, it's that's a huge piece off my mind. You know, we still have 100 Macs coming in, and we're going to have to deal with imaging and tagging those, and, you know, we got peripherals coming in, so to have to not to worry about those is huge.
Well, you could almost even drop ship those directly to the schools, if you really knew where that everything was going. And that's really the difference between, you know, in a lot of ways, the Mac and the Chromebook outside of price is just like how you set those up and image them is completely different. Mac is still, of course, I don't talk to a lot of schools, and I know some do, but most schools to me, it seems like for their students are doing Chromebook or iPad, the Mac doesn't seem to be a consideration for as many schools. I know we have some listeners that are doing, I actually was emailing with the school this morning about they were asking about which access point to deploy for their new campus, which Arrow have access point, the 130 to 230, and they're doing MacBook Airs, like 220 of them. So there are still some, but like most schools, it's like iPad or Chrome OS.
Well, and I think that if you're starting from scratch or you have the opportunity to not step back from a laptop, I can't see how you would not. I mean, there's so many opportunity costs you give up financially. But you know, if you've traditionally had laptops, that's a hard thing to step back from. You have those programs that you've done so much training on, and it's really hard to change that model. But if you're starting from scratch, I was thinking about this as I was going through these orders with the Chromebooks, and you know that so many schools have had growing pains with their inclivity to have overworked IT staff. And so you see a lot of these schools that are a one or two man operation that really can't handle it. And, you know, I was kind of thinking nowadays if you did a Chromebook, I could handle this deployment by myself, no problem. And that's a huge asset to schools to be able to devote that resource rather than to the IT side, to be able to devote that to the educational side. And that might be the biggest payoff, even more than financially, is being able to divert those resources into the classroom.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in that boat with looking at our next deployment, which we're doing in the spring, is like I would love to do Chrome OS across the board for faculty and students, but we're kind of in that same boat, which I'm going to like, even though I think I can make, even though I can make it work technically, mm-hmm. I think I would like lose some, not credibility, but I think I would lose some goodwill.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know. I've got to decide, like, is that worth it? You know, what, you know, and because you do need that goodwill as an IT staff. You need people to be happy and not that you just deploy whatever, not that you like to give everybody a 15-inch souped up, you know, Retina MacBook Pro, but you just have to look at, like, what are you gaining here? Like, okay, if I save that money, what am I spending that money on? You know, does that money get me to a place in the classroom where I couldn't get to before, or is it just money savings, for example? So yeah, that's a great point. It's a whole lot easier to move straight to Chromebook than it is to move from MacBook as a staff, like MacBook to back to Chromebook, because there are limitations, there are differences. So Kevin, thanks for coming on the show. I definitely appreciate it. I am sad that you have left Tennessee. I won't get to see you at all the events that we have is from the independent school side. So I'm very, very, very sad about that, but I'm super happy that you've moved on to have something you're happy at. And because you moved back, this is home for you guys. So you're moving back home, correct?
It's home. And I am beyond enthused. I am beside myself to be in the beautiful Roaring Fork Valley. It is amazing up here on the western slope of Colorado. It is a dream come true. I'm just looking out the window right now, just pinching myself. But I'm going to always miss Tennessee, and it was a great, great chapter in our lives, and we love Middle Tennessee.
Well, thanks for coming on, and thanks, everybody, for listening this week, and thanks to our sponsors for sponsoring the show, and Fraser will be back next week.